You're listening to It's a Pro Man, a knitting podcast about a guy in the Boston area with yarn issues. This is episode 11. I'm the new yoga. In this episode, I'm going to be switching up a couple of things on my show. I'm changing my pointy sticks portion. I'm going to rename it now because I feel like everybody's using that or it's too generic, so for my show, I'll now refer to it as Weekly Yarn A Lot, which I think is witty for me anyhow. And today's show, we're going to be talking about lots of things that happened since the last show I produced. And, just listen to the music. And that was a band called Super Ego, and they're from the UK, and they've set out to recapture the original aim of songwriting, whereas I'm trying to set out this episode to recapture whatever it was I started doing this podcast for in the first place, because I'm suddenly realizing people are listening, and I need to know what it is I was planning on doing with this show, and try to reconvey that, or make sure I'm on track. It's been a interesting couple of weeks because I haven't actually recorded in a while. The last episode 10 I recorded previously to actually before episode 9, and then I aired it as episode 10. So today is Saturday and it's June 17th, 2006, and it's 11:17 at night. Just trying to get you guys in the mood to understand where I'm coming from right now as I record for you. And it's just been a long week. And a lot of interesting things have happened to me in this week. And I'm going to share some of that with you. And today's episode is going to be a lot of my weekly yarn a lot. And then I'm actually going to play the last New Hampshire sheep and wool interview. And finally, I'll be playing an interview, part of my yarn crawl. Yarn crawl episode 3, I guess. And it's going to be an interview with the ladies at Sparks Craft Studio in Davis Square. and they're really, really nice to have sat down and talked to me for a while. I actually don't know them. I've been to their store a couple of times, and I sent them an email, and Jan was one of the owners, was very kind in sitting down with me, and her co-owner, Amy, had a lot to say, so it was great talking to them. So this week has been full of interesting things, and I've been getting a lot of press. And let's start with the first thing that happened this week, which was Worldwide Knit in Public Day. And I stepped up to the bat in this case because nobody else was actually putting together an event. So I said, well, if nobody else is doing it, then I guess I should put together an event. So I had a bunch of people gather at the Aubon Pond in Harvard Square, and we all sat around and knit, and it was great. A couple of guys from the KGB, the Knitting Gentlemen of Boston group, the one that I started, came by, and it was really nice to see them. There are a lot of new people who I met who are knitters. I met Ariel, she's currently like on her sock number 12 for the year, which is kind of insane. And I've been wondering and talking about with some other friends, maybe there should be some sort of competition for person who has most socks within a year. And, you know, but then you have to sort of standardize the whole thing, and then you got to get people to be honest. And I don't know if that's ever going to work, but it'd be fun because I think there's definitely some interesting competition out there. And socks, number of socks is definitely some sort of, you know, gauge of what type of knitter you are and, you know, how long you've been knitting and such. So it could be interesting. I also met Anna, who is a recent Bostonian. She moved here from Milan. I'm not sure what she was doing there exactly, but she recently moved to the area just north of here called Beverly, and she came down hoping to find other people and meet some people. And I think she's really interesting because she's actually doing the master knitting program through the Knitting Guilds, and I've only read about it a little bit, so it was kind of cool to meet somebody who is actually participating in getting their master knitting, I don't know if it's a license or a brochure, or I don't know what it is exactly, but I think it's kind of neat. I also met a girl there named Emily, who's making these really cool flame gloves for a friend of her who juggles poi, and I'm not exactly sure what it is. I've looked it up on the internet, and you can look it up too, but basically it's flaming poi, which to me sounds like some sort of monkey joke. Anyhow, but basically there are these people out there who like juggling these really cool flaming balls of poi, and apparently it gets cold out there sometimes, even though they've got a big, you know, handful of fire. So she made this really cool, this really cool set of gloves, and they have flames coming up, and they're black gloves with little flames that are orange and yellow and red. And I've actually put pictures of all these people and of all the people who showed up on the website in a prior post, so if you want to take a look for it, I'm sure you'll find it. It's not hard to find stuff on the website. If you're new, this is a good time to say it. The website is itsapurlman, as in It's a Pearl Man, which is the podcast you're listening to currently. So anyhow, two final people I wanted to mention who at the Knit in Public Day. The first is Danielle, who's a reporter. She's also a knitter, and I've met her at Lucy's shop before at Mind's Eye. And Danielle was kind enough to show up, and she did a report about the whole Knit in Public Day thing and perhaps about the internet. I haven't read the the article yet. It comes out tomorrow, Sunday morning. So actually, it'll come out in about half an hour. And it's going to be in the City Weekly section, or I'm not sure exactly what section, but if you look, go to bostonglobe.com. I'm sure if you type in knit or knitting or whatever, our articles should show up for Sunday. And I know that for the first 2 days it's on the internet, you can find it for free. And if you're, you know, in the Boston area, you can just pick up a copy. And I bet you there's going to be a picture of me, because there was a photographer there at the event, and he kept taking these pictures of me like really up close and kind of like up in my nose hair. It was really freaky because he was just trying to get different angles of me knitting. And actually what he was getting wasn't me knitting. It was actually me tinking, because it's my current project. So I was working on my baby surprise, and it was driving me nuts because it's a lot of counting, and or at least for me, it's a lot of counting. For other people, I'm sure they wouldn't even need to count. They could just kind of, you know, do it in their head and just kind of find the right spot. But at any rate, I kept screwing up, and I kept having to tick back a couple rows. And sometimes I just gave up on tinking and just ripped out and pulled back a couple rows and started up again. This project is driving me crazy. It's the Elizabeth Zimmerman Baby Surprise. You can find it in The Opinionated Knitter, or you can also find it in her workshop book, or you can actually find the actual pattern somewhere. You can purchase it separately, you know, for $5, that kind of thing. At any rate, it's driving me a little crazy, but I'm getting through it, and I'm now done with the sleeves, which makes me really happy to be done with the sleeves. So the baby surprise is now up to the is now at the point where I'm starting to make the body part, and I have to do 10 increases in the center, and it should be simple. And it, you know, there's definitely a back section to this baby surprise, but for some reason it's just driving me crazy, and I don't know what it is. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I think I'll figure it out in time, and it'll make me a better knitter to have completed this project. But having said that, I also think I want to make a second baby surprise. It's not. I do have a lot of people who are having kids in my life who are, you know, people who have called me actually this week. A really good friend of mine from high school called me and told me his wife is pregnant, and I'm really, really happy for them. But that's not the reason I want to do so many baby surprises. I think it's kind of nice to have a couple of these baby surprises or baby sweaters or baby projects sitting, you know, in a stash somewhere, because you don't always have the time to put these things together. And, you know, as much as it would be nice to make one for personalized for each kid, to be honest, you know, the kids aren't going to remember it. The parents will. And if you make a couple, you know, some for girls, some for guys, and some for, you know, everything in between, you know, they'll appreciate that, and they won't ask you when you made it, and you don't have to tell them. So there you go. Don't tell my friends. So in that vein, I'm thinking maybe next month I'll start a baby surprise knit along. It also turns out that I'm apparently going to all the places in Boston right now and telling everybody about baby surprise. And there are a lot of newer knitters out there like myself who have no idea about the joy or the insanity that Elizabeth Zimmerman brings you when you work on her projects. And the baby surprise is great because, in my Woolcott episode, as Sean was telling me, it was another Yarn Crawl episode. It's one of these really great pieces because it's a one piece garter stitch. So it's not too incredibly difficult. It's just a lot of, double increases and double decreases. And, those are pretty standard things, and keeping track of, your count is also pretty standard. So it's one of those things that's good for new knitters to do, and once you've gotten through the sleeves like I have, it really becomes one of those things where you're just like, oh, that's how it goes, that's how it folds, and it just, you know, it gets much better from that point on. And at any rate, I think there are a lot of people who are interested in trying this out because it is such a good, you know, standard to learn. Now, one person who doesn't need to try this out or need to learn this is my friend Patience, who is an avid knitter and is a large part of my knitting community. And she actually just finished her baby surprise sweater. She started hers about a week or two before I did. Actually, I'm not sure exactly when she started hers. I'll take it back. But you can check out on the finishedobjectdance.blogspot.com. I think that's where she is. Or you can just Google Finished Object Dance. She's got a blog there. But at any rate, hers is done, and it's beautiful. And I love what she did. She did, and to figure out colors, well, she has lots of different colors of Jameson, which I hear is really, really cool yarn. I'm not sure exactly what the deal is, but it is very nice, regardless. So she has this really, really great idea. And what she did was she had so many different colors. What she decided in order to figure out when to change color was at the end of the day of knitting, she would just change colors. The next day she'd use a different color. And she had maybe four or five different colors in there, so it was kind of interesting to see, because she also knitted these on her commutes to see how much she could get done on her commute, on one leg of her commute. So, at any rate, it turned out for a beautiful baby surprise sweater, and you can check that out on her blog, and I'll try to put a link up on the site for her blog. So, that's the Worldwide Knit in Public Day, and also that covers the projects I've been working on. That's the only real project I've had for a little bit. I don't have any calendar notes because nobody's sending me any calendar things that they want me posting them. Obviously, the one calendar thing I can always add is, you know, the Boston Knit in Public. They have a date. It's September 24th, and I think it's from noon to 4. It's a four-hour thing. And, you know, you think I'd know, especially considering I'm now the PR chair, I should kind of know when the event is happening. It would be useful in, you know, the role that I'm now carrying. I should be sending out a lot of PR stuff. If anybody has any ideas of places where I might post some information about this knitting stuff, please let me know. I'll be happy to continue making a large list of people I need to contact to get the word out about the Boston Knit Out and Crochet, too. Can't forget the crocheters. I know they're out there somewhere. I feel like they've got much, like, smaller community. I think they're growing, and especially with that new Happy Hooker book. But it's definitely a much smaller group than the knitting community, which I've stumbled upon in the last year or so. So if you have a calendar event, please let me know. Also, I guess Stitches West or Midwest is happening in August in Chicago, and that sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm trying to get in contact with them. So again, if anybody actually knows anybody at Stitches, please let me know, because I'd like to try to do a podcast gathering thing at maybe at Stitches East in Baltimore, because I think that'd be a lot of fun. I'd love to meet a lot of my listeners, and I think they'd like to meet me, and I'd like to hang out. I mean, I think in the end, that's what this is all about, and that's why everybody likes reading the blogs and everybody likes the podcast and things like that, is it's just a way for all of us to sort of connect through this, you know, craft or hobby or whatever you want to call it. Speaking about connecting, I've been on the side trying to find some connections with bands, because there's a lot of these bands that have record labels and things like that, and I've been trying to convince them to let me use their music, because I think they represent my guy stuff a lot better. And so there's this song that I've actually been singing in my head, well, not the entire time, but I've been singing in my head since I was in high school, by a group named Weezer, and it's actually called Sweater. And I thought it would be a perfect kind of song, that, and they have another song about being a geek and being in the garage and, you know, having no dates, which is what my life was like when I was younger. And so at any rate, I wanted to put that into a show and maybe, you know, really dedicate one show to being a guy who knits and how that, you know, affects everything, and get some other guy responses. But it just hasn't happened yet. But at any rate, the show hasn't come together yet, but I did get a response from Weezer. However, in order to use their music, as always, there's hurdles to jump, and that hurdle might be too expensive for my blood. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to try to convince them that maybe they need to release some of their music for the music through the music.podshow.com website, which is where my music comes from currently. And that first song, Super Ego, was from there as well. And
like we it's me, Victor, uh-oh, a.k.a. Elamakuto from the Lumina Nananun blog.
Oh, no.
I'm just saying the...
Welcome to Podcasting 101. Try not to talk over things. So the next thing I wanted to play for you was this great little... oh, my God. Yeah, this is what happens if you guys actually send me anything. I'll screw it up. But I've got this audio commentary from one of my listeners who's in Germany, and he's from Thailand, and he's a really nice guy, and I've been talking or emailing with him or corresponding with him for a little while, or ever since I started the show. He's been very confident that the show would be a hit, and that he has lots, and he's a very nice guy. I don't know what really to say about him. I always gush about people who I think fondly of. But anyway, here's his little audio comment for the show, and I gotta tell you guys, I totally live for this, and this is the best. I can't tell you how much fun it is to hear other people talking to me or returning the conversation in my direction.
Hi Guido, it's me, Victor, a.k.a. Elamakuto from the Numina Nananun blog. I'm just saying this audio comment in as I promised you, and I know it's a tad late. Well, not a tad, but just late. But hey, better late than never, isn't it? Anyway, I've just something to tell you, and it could probably go under goddamn project. And mine is my first pair of Jaywalkers. You see, I started knitting my first side earlier this year. I think it was in January. Half the cuff down, I tried it on, and it wouldn't even go over my foot. So the only solution was to frog it and restart. I did so, and now I've finished that one side. And yes, it does fit. So, however, I think I'm being hit with a second sock syndrome pretty bad. But, well, we'll see how long it takes me to finish this pair. I think one of the main problems is that I have just way too many projects on the needles here. Well, anyhow, I'm still trying to catch up with all the podcasts I've downloaded Oh my god, so many blue dots in my iPod, I know. Anyway, hope you're well and keep up with the great podcast.
Okay, so that last bit there, that was due to the lovely people at Apple and their iTunes product. And I'm not sure exactly, I'm sure other people know what song that is or who was playing it. And I apologize to those musicians because I don't mean to not give them credit. I'm just not exactly sure where that came from. I have a lot of CDs and they don't all have titles on them. And I'm not sure exactly why that is. So at any rate, thank you, Victor. And good luck with the Jaywalker sock. I'll give Kathy a little crap for her sock design. But, you know, I think it's like with my project, it's just about the process and getting through it. And, you know, you just be a better knitter at the other end of every project that you work on. Apparently, I'm not terribly a better podcaster at the end of every episode that I, or after every episode that I make. I did actually have a review this week, and this was totally flabbergasted me. I did a Google search because I was looking for news to share with you guys, and I have some that I started off with that I wanted to share with you. But I was doing a Google search for knitting and news, you know, and lo and behold, up came an article about my podcast. Apparently, my podcast was reviewed on a website called thebostonist.com, and I got 3.25 stars. I think it's pretty good. I'm pretty happy with what the reviewer had to say. He wasn't a knitter, and he said maybe if you were a knitter, you'd enjoy it more, which I can understand. I mean, this is a show about knitting and about me and about Boston, but he did appreciate the Boston part and a little bit about me. He thought I was kind of funny, but he did have some complaints about the sound, and as you can see, I'm still trying to control all that. It just it gets away from me sometimes. And although I could go back and edit a lot of this, I really like keeping it as live as I can, you know, and someday I'll stop fumbling as much, and everybody will appreciate that to some degree, I guess. But you know, there are no outtakes in the show. Everything you're hearing is what I'm doing, and I do very little editing, and there's good reasons for that. At any rate, so the reason I was looking up news is I had heard from somebody that there are these two ladies who have been stealing yarn in the Atlanta area, and they had stolen, I can't remember, it was like $13,000 worth of yarn over a couple of decades. And I couldn't help but think how horrible that was. And, well, I'll be honest, when I first heard the news, I thought it was really, really funny. But then I started reading forums at knittersreviews.com or .org, I'm not even sure. And there were definitely two tracks there. One was, this is really funny, I can't believe people are stealing yarn. And then the other track was, this is not funny, this is a crime, and you shouldn't make light of it. And I think, you know, the truth of all this lies somewhere in between. You're right, stealing is bad, and actually I hope these people get punished, because that's a lot of yarn. But at the same time, you know, these people obviously had issues. And there are many theories, and I love when people start, you know, gossiping about these kind of things. I guess the story was only a little video, and there was only, I found a link, and I'll put it up on the site, but, you know, it was only a small little snippet of information that we could get out of the whole story, so everybody had to come up with their own theories as to what was going on, and most of the people think they just had some sort of issue, because nothing was mentioned in the story, apparently, about them knitting anything or reselling anything. They just had bags and bags. And then the scary part in the article, and I know this will put a fear in most knitters that I know, and it has in everybody who I've told so far, the reason they got caught was because one of the ladies who was stealing all this yarn, her husband had gotten sick of her huge stash and called the police on her. And that is frightening. If my pumpkin ever call the police on me, I don't know that I could account for where my yarn came from, but I've got enough friends who can be like, yeah, he shops here. However, again, I don't have rooms and rooms full, or nor do I have $13,000 worth of anything. I've probably collected, it's a good question, how much stash do I have? And maybe that'll be the focus of another episode. And if you guys want to, send me information, an email at twoskeins@itsapearlman.com. about how large your stash is and how much do you think in value it's worth, in case, say, your significant other decided to rat you out. In other knitting news, and there is some more knitting news besides my show being reviewed, which was pretty exciting, but still, apparently somebody is doing an art show having their grandmother knit in a museum, which I don't know what to make of that. Sort of this art imitates knitting, imitates art. It's just weird. Whereas there's the final article I found about knitting in the last week or so was about the World Cup World Record scarf, which is just awesome. And you can find a couple of links. I found a couple of links and I'll put them up. These people obviously are having a great time with the idea. And, you know, it's, knitting as a competition is definitely starting to take flight, not only through the yarn harlot, but through everybody else. And the idea of the world's largest scarf for the World Cup, it, you know, and for me, soccer is has played a big part in my life. And I used to play soccer a lot, or football, depending on where in the world you are. Or football, you know. And so anyhow, so soccer plays a large part of my life. And the thing about it is, soccer is always a fall event for me. So the idea of scarves always made sense to me. Whereas the World Cup is in the spring, summertime. And I don't understand why you'd make a World Cup world record scarf if it's warm outside. I think you don't need it, per se. I mean, if you were at many of the games that I had been as a kid, then you might need it, but, you know, I don't think you need it when it's really, really warm out, unless it were made of something really nice. I mean, you guys know I've made a summer scarf for my mom, and that's really nice, but I don't think I'd make a world record, you know, scarf at that point. So, let's break this up a bit. I have my last interview here from the New Hampshire Wool Sheep and Wool Festival. It's with the owner of Ilhieu Farm, and she explains to me a bit more about what's going on at these things, because knitting's only part of it. The other part is about the sheep, and about fiber, and about spinning, and while I am a new spinner, it's always good, because I am a new spinner, I need as many much guidance as I can get. So here's my interview, and I hope it goes well. Remember, my interviews were all done on tape, so they're a little, you know, scratchy sounding.
I pronounce the farm name as Ilhieu Farm.
Ilhieu.
And it's named after the first person on our deed, and that was Ilhieu Gifford, who was a Revolutionary War patriot. And okay. The farm that we have is located about 45 minutes from Albany, New York.
Okay, great. And how long have you been at that farm?
We moved there about 20 years ago and got our first sheep in 1986. And our first lambing was 1987, so next year will be our 20th anniversary with lambing.
Oh, that's great.
Grazing lambs.
And how many sheep do you have currently?
About 150.
Excellent. Are they all of all different breeds? Or?
We have primarily Romney sheep, which are long-wooled, what's called a long-wooled breed. And their fleeces are fairly lustrous, and they the fleece is quite versatile, and they come in white and shades of natural colored from very pale gray to almost black. And they originated in the southeastern part of Britain called the Kent area. And right now in New Zealand, the Romney is the primary breed of sheep in New Zealand, and there are probably 30 million of them.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So what are we looking at here? Since I don't know. I keep seeing bags, and then I see some fuzzy stuff sticking out of the bags. Are these, each one of these represent a sheep, or are they like many sheep, or what's going on?
Yeah, we have our fleeces here on plastic shelves, and I was joking that I go around with all this plastic and then I sell a natural product. And on plastic shelves, they're very easily disassembled for lightweight traveling, and I have, I guess these shelves will hold about 24 fleeces, and each bag represents the shearing of one sheep for 1 year, minus the icky parts. So when I am preparing a fleece to bring to a sale, I put it on a flat screen called a skirting table, and it's just chicken wire on a wooden frame. And we take out any bits of manure and heavy parts that have a lot of hay in it, because who wants hay next to their skin? and discolored sections or sections that are really not very attractive. So I try to present what is most attractive that that sheep produced in the year.
Excellent. Can you tell me about, so I'm pointing to a bag with dark, I guess, dark wool, dark colored
right.
wool with some light highlights, I guess, at the
okay.
edges.
Yeah, we our fleeces, the natural colored fleeces, get sun bleached. So the tips on them, the part next to the skin will be the darkest and the tips will be lighter color. And a lot of people like the variations in the color because it makes a very attractive variegated yarn. And the sun bleaching doesn't make the tip fragile. It just bleaches it as just the same as a person in the summer might have their hair get sun bleached.
Right. So are you a spinner and or knitter?
I know how to spin. I don't call myself a spinner with a capital S, but I did learn how to spin, and it has helped me to guide people in terms of what type of wool, what type of fleece they might want to buy for a given project.
Great. Have you made any projects out of the any of the stuff that you've made yourself?
I have enough yarn, hand spun, hand dyed yarn at home to make a sweater, but I don't knit.
Welcome to my world. I can knit, but I have no idea how to make any
so
of this.
So what I really should do is hire somebody to make me a sweater out of these skeins and skeins of yarn.
There you go. Then you can wear it to the shows, and
right,
when they ask
right.
you what the finished product looks like, you know.
Well, people often ask me, did you make that sweater? And I say, no, I got it in Salvation Army. I go to the Salvation Army looking for barn clothes, and I end up finding good stuff.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate
it. I hope you're enjoying. Oh, I should tell your listeners that Memorial Day weekend is the Massachusetts Sheep and Woolcraft Fair.
Already happened.
At Cummington Fairgrounds in Massachusetts. And then July 1st is an event near me called the Hot and Hazy Fiber Day in Scaghtycoke, New York.
Ooh.
And in the fall, we have the New York Sheep and Wool Festival in Rhinebeck, New York. So there's lots of opportunities for people to go see fiber and live, especially live animals, too.
Yeah, I think that's really important. People know where everything's coming from.
Right.
All right, well, thank you for your time. And
okay.
I'll.
So, remember how I was telling you guys that this is a work in progress? And so, for a comparison, in the podcasting world, I'm at episode 10, or now 11. And so this is sort of like moving from scarves to hats, or from hats to scarves, or maybe even to beginning a sock. And I'm still learning a lot. I still have a lot to learn, and I'm still working on it. So when I went to talk to the people at Sparks, I may have goofed with my sound equipment, and originally I may have had the wrong mic set, so it sounds like everybody's in a tin box, and I do correct for it in the middle of the interview, but I just want to let you guys know and to apologize to the lovely ladies of Spark Crafts Studio, and let you guys know that that's my mistake, but I think you still get a good idea of what's going on at Spark and what they're up to and how things are. And it's really, it's a very unique place. It's very different from any of the yarn stores I've been to. And I'm really happy to share it with you here. And when I get to the yarn crawl take two, we'll do the interviews again, or do new interviews. And hopefully they'll still be interested in doing another interview with me, even though I've goofed this one. And anyhow, I give you the interview. I'm here at Sparks Craft Studio with Jan Stephenson and Amy Appleyard. Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
Excellent. And they started the studio here in January of 2005. Jan was previously working for a prominent nonprofit, and Amy owned a theatrical lighting design company. The concept for Sparks Craft Studio was born during an assignment for Jan and Amy's MBA program at Boston University. So let's start there. Did you get a good grade? Excellent. And so you guys met at the university then, is that, and how do you move from that to this? Let's start.
Sure. So it was January or February of 2004, and that was the second semester of our second year of business school, and Amy and I were both enrolled in the public nonprofit management program there. And we had to write a business plan for a social entrepreneurship class that we were taking. So we started playing around with looking at opportunities in the craft industry, reading a lot of research and media attention that had been focusing on a renewed interest in things like knitting and crocheting and scrapbooking and jewelry making among sort of a younger, hipper demographic. And we, you know, did a little bit of research and found that there weren't a whole lot of opportunity or a lot of retailers out there kind of taking advantage of the opportunity for a younger, more sort of urban crafter.
And so did you also get to go out in the field and hang out and, you know, check out other stores, or was it
definitely
mostly?
Definitely, yep. Lots of shopping and crafting and sitting in with other Stitch and Bitch groups and stuff in the Boston area, just to kind of get a feel for what was going on and just take the pulse of Boston and try to figure out where we would want to locate this one.
No, you guys were crafters before you entered this project, correct?
Sort of. I mean, we've both dabbled. I mean, we certainly love crafts. We love the products that are in the market and the projects that you can make and the fact that it's a good way to engage with other people. But neither of us were sort of crafters or artisans. We really saw this as an opportunity to bring crafting to people who are more beginners or casual crafters who might be intimidated by, you know, some of the other offerings out there that are more targeted toward intermediate or expert type crafters. So
great. So why don't you tell me a little bit about the store? I mean, for my listeners out there, since you can't see it, we're sitting in this beautiful little room, and it's red with funky little chairs and fun little circle mirror, and then it looks over the store. So that's kind of nice because you can actually see other people shopping while you're doing stuff, and it's fun to, you know, it creates that sense of community.
One of the reasons why we were drawn to this space, we knew that we wanted to be in Davis Square because it's such a hip, fun place, and right outside of Boston, and very convenient being on the T-stop and all that stuff, and also easy to park and easy to drive to. So we started looking at retail spaces in Davis Square, and nothing was really
working for us, we didn't think that we wanted to be just in a large box, because we wanted something to be a little bit more different, a space that as you entered it and walked through it, you would have a real sense of discovery, kind of moving from one room to the next. And then a real estate broker showed us this space that had been an office before, so that's why it's kind of sectioned off into what we now have as a series of classrooms and party rooms and stuff. And we thought that it lent itself pretty creatively to being the retail and studio location that we were looking for, because we could, you know, have the retail up front, sort of as you walk in the door on the first and second floors, and then beyond the retail section on both floors, you could have the classrooms and the storage that we needed in a small office, and then also a large facility for big parties, and then also a large papercraft studio.
Right. And I know I'm not going to be the first one to say this, but, you know, I'd like to applaud you on the incredible sense of design you have and the colors and the feel of this place. I've always really liked coming in here because it's sort of like a little candy land of toys, you know, right. What I consider toys anyhow. And the spaces, although I'm not a member, and I'd like you guys to speak to that in a moment, but I've always liked walking through the spaces when I had an opportunity, even last week when I was at the craftster.org event.
Would you like us to talk a little bit about membership?
Yeah, I mean, your concept is different than other yarn shops and the idea that you're actually trying to run sort of a studio. And
yep, so we have there are basically four different parts of the business. The first is the retail store. So we sell not only just yarn and needles and notions for knitting and crochet, but also we have a bead jewelry section and a paper crafts section of our retail store. Then we also run classes in all of the areas that are supported by our retail, so knitting, crocheting, sewing, jewelry making, scrapbooking, card making. Then the third component of our business is we do private parties, so we're a great place for a birthday party, a girls' night out, bridal shower, baby shower. We do a lot of that, where people can come and learn how to do something creative and have, you know, a meaningful experience and social occasion with their friends and family above and beyond just eating and drinking and opening gifts. Then the last component, which really makes us pretty different from other retailers in the crafts industry, is that we have a studio membership component. So in the times when the classes and event space aren't being used for classes and events, we, you know, have all of this wonderful space for people to come together and work on projects either on their own or with other people. And the way that we do that is we have a day rate. So you can come here and hang out and use the facility for the day for $8. We also offer the opportunity to become a member of the studio, and that's $50 for 3 months or $150 for the year, and you get access to the space. You get an entry into our Savvy Shopper program, which is our retail frequent buyer program, free open studios classes, so there is some free instruction kind of built into that, the membership model.
Cool. And how many members have you guys had so far? I mean, how's it going?
It's good. It's sort of a fluid thing. I think at our max number, we've had about 100, 150 members. And then because we have the 3 month and the annual, it sort of, you know, ebbs and flows, especially on a seasonal basis. So,
excellent. And what type of customer, I mean, are you finding that the people who are coming in are the people you've been targeting, or are they different types of people?
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like, I think one of the things that just has made us the happiest since opening the business is that it did seem to appeal to the people that we were hoping it would appeal to: beginner crafters, busy professional cosmopolitan, mostly women who want to learn how to do these things, have wanted to learn how to do these things, but have never been able to find a way to commit to a 6 or 8 week knitting class. And yet they can come here and drop in and in one evening get the basics down and learn how to do, you know, just knit and purl, the real basics, and then choose to come back for a more advanced class and then projects and stuff as they can fit it into their lifestyle. So we've had so many people thank us for being able to, you know, provide the offerings in a setting that they were attracted to, and then also with the flexibility that they've just been looking for but haven't found from other knitting shops or bead jewelry shops or stuff like that. So
that's really great. I'm glad that you're getting the people that you want to do it, and it's sort of working out.
It's fun.
So what can you tell me about the type of yarns you guys have, and how you go about the process of choosing your supply here?
Yep. When we first opened, we were meeting with different yarn reps. We actually met with one yarn rep from Knitting Fever before we ever even signed a lease, because he was the only one who would meet with us, because most of the reps just they're very busy and they didn't want to waste their time with somebody who they didn't even know if they could open an account with, because you have to have a retail location. You can't just be, you know, potential internet sales and stuff like that. So, we met with him and, were overwhelmed. We'd never met with a rep before, and he just brought in suitcases and suitcases of beautiful, you know, everything from the Noro to the fun, funky Gadifra stuff, just tons of yarn. And when you see suitcase after suitcase after suitcase from one vendor alone, you drool. And because he was willing to meet with us, and we were kind of in a rush and felt like we wanted to place some orders, we placed some pretty large orders with him to begin with. And then once we got our lease, we were then able to make connections with other people. Susan Shabo was an amazing connection because it got us into the Manos, which is one of our best sellers, and one of our favorite yarns. So that was, felt like a real fortunate meeting. And that was also before we were in this space. We met in a coffee shop right down the road and chose some of our beginning inventory from there. And then we met with a rep named Stan Baker, who was helping us with needles, the clover needles, and the things that we knew that we wanted to carry, some of the notions and stuff. And he recommended, his wife owns Windsor Button downtown, and he recommended, you know, trying a few of the Lion Brand yarns, because he knew that we were really targeting a lot of the beginner knitters. So we got into, you know, some of the wool ease, in all of the different weights, and those have been very popular with people who just aren't sure if they're ready to commit. You know, they just want to make a scarf and see if they like knitting. So we like having a real affordable option, and we think of it as a real value yarn too. And then we had our lease and we moved in, and we were just taking advice from all of our customers. We were getting just a lot of people coming through wanting to check out the space. Alistair recommended that we try the Malabrigo, and we have since found that's one of our best sellers. So he was asking about it. Yeah. And so we were really responding to what, you know, customers were asking for. And then just meeting with different reps, taking a look at their stuff. And we had started to figure out what our, like, our core customers were interested in. Simple projects, long, straight things, you know, ponchos, shawls, tons of scarves, was mostly what people were asking for. And so we've kind of catered stuff to that. We do some of the novelty. We have a lot of the Taki Stacy Charles yarns. And then we've kind of tapered off on the Knitting Fever things. We never did get any of the Noro, which is so hard to get. But we're just stocking up on other things.
So I know that you're going to have to go in a little bit, so I want to make sure I get this question in now. I've noticed on, I've been here on a Thursday and Friday night, just quickly popping in to look at some stuff, and it's sort of like women, groups of women flocking from one side of the store to the other, upstairs and downstairs. It's kind of insane. It's like a madhouse in here. It's really, really great. Now, I know that that's a pretty awesome scene, and I'm just wondering for you, when for both of you actually, when you felt like this is finally like coming together, because I'm sure this, since it's a, as you guys refer to yourselves, as a startup company to some degree, you know, and it's not like a store, you know, the original regular template of a store, you know, how did you know when things were, you know, together or coming together, or did you feel like, I'm really glad I did this?
Yeah, we too. I mean, I think one of the things about entrepreneurs in general is that you're always looking forward and not back. And you know, I think you don't spend enough time kind of celebrating successes. So Amy and I are constantly thinking, what more can we do? How can we add more value? How can we make our customers happier? What other, you know, how else can we develop this business? So I mean, we've had lots of really great press, both just you know, in the general media, from, you know, we were on Chronicle, so being on TV was pretty cool. And we've gotten some business awards. The Mass Retailers Association gave us creative concepts in retailing, which was neat. And as Amy said earlier, just getting the clientele and the amount of enthusiasm and the response that we've gotten from our targeted clientele has been, you know, really amazing for us. But we're always focused on the future. You know, we see big things for this concept and this kind of a company going forward. So, you know, we're always trying to go forward. But yeah, we're happy.
Yeah.
We're happy we did it.
It sounds pretty busy. So do you guys still have time to work on your own projects with all this madness going on?
I guess so. we're both fairly impatient people. So, we do quick easy projects, you know. We haven't...
Like our clientele.
But, I mean, we've both gotten better. We had just started knitting when we first, you know, conceived this. And I think we've gotten better. We're almost each of us, I think, independently ready to tackle a sweater.
Sweet.
Move beyond the shawl and the poncho. So that that's a goal for the fall.
Definitely.
We'll be sitting in on some of our classes here. And,
yeah. We're actually contemplating having a learn to knit a sweater with the founders of Spark class. So.
And bead jewelry making, we often do a lot. We'll have stressful days and we'll be like, we just need to go make the necklace and make something fun. And with paper crafting, Jan's a real avid scrapbooker and you find time. I mean, there are days where you come in and you say, I've been up till 4 a.m. scrapbooking.
I'll do marathons and then I'll neglect it for a month or two because I'm working on other things. But
Hardest thing is definitely ordering the products and getting so excited about when they come in. And then inevitably when they come in, we don't have any time to work on the stuff. So then the yarn will fly off the shelves and you'll realize you have to reorder it before you can ever do your own.
That's
the
right.
thing that you were envisioning working on. So.
And can I ask you what projects you guys are working on now? Or
In knitting?
I don't know.
General?
I mean, do you have so many crafts projects? So I wonder if it's just knitting. You know?
Right. I have one knitting project right now that I started a couple times and keep getting frustrated because I'm horrible with counting, but it's the Manos Cotton Stria keyhole, the buttonhole scarf. I don't know if you've seen it. We've got the book out here. You've got to check it out. Gorgeous. And looks so simple, and it's like a one skein project, and I was like, this is great. I can do it. And you have to count and count and count, and if you get off, it's knit sideways, so if you get off in one row, you basically have to just undo the entire thing to start over because the keyholes won't line up.
I need to introduce you to my baby surprise sweater I'm working on right now. It's the same kind of thing. Elizabeth Zimmerman, it's all one piece and then it folds.
Yeah.
And if you're not paying attention to the numbers,
it won't fold.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this is just a one skein project, but I've started it 3 times now. So I hope to be done before the summer because I wanted to wear it this summer. I'm doing it in this like bright green. It's really fun. So.
Oh, well, maybe you can wear it next summer. Yeah. I've decided my new thing is I'm going to take my love of handbags and apply it to knitting. That's what I think I would be passionate about knitting. I'm not so into the idea of, I mean, I'll learn how to knit a sweater, but it seems like too big a project for me. I'm kind of an instant gratification girl. So, and right now my big summer project is just getting all my scrapbooks squared away. So, a lot of travel.
And a lot of people tell us socks would be good for us just because of our nature. Like, you know, get it done, get it done, get it done.
Yeah, small projects are good for me.
Yeah, so are you going to install a washing machine so you can do the felting of the handbags?
That's right. Yeah, we should.
We've got one at home. We should put one here. Then we could do our laundry here.
That's right. We could spend enough time here. We could do our laundry.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time, and I hope to see you guys again soon.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that concludes the interview. So next week I'll have a lot more yarn a lot, and I'm not sure what else I have on the show yet. It's a week-to-week project, and every week it gets a little better, and the sound keeps getting a little better, and I keep trying to make it a little better, and I hope that you guys appreciate that and are enjoying this and are growing with me in technology, time, projects, etc. If you're a new knitter out there and you're listening to the show, please let me know what you think. And if you're not a new knitter and you're listening to the show, let me know what you think. That's pretty much it. I thrive on the replies and knowing what people are thinking, and that's why I do this, and that's why I keep meeting more and more knitting people and finding more and more projects. So thanks for listening. I just want to take a quick second to tell you guys a little bit about the music that was on the show. You guys already know about the first song, but the second song is actually by a band called Juniper's Daughter, and they're going to be playing in Cambridge on Monday night. So if you're in the Boston area and you want to hear a pretty good band, come see Juniper's Daughter, and they'll be at All Asia, and I believe the show starts at 6:30, but it's two people on the playlist, so I saw on their website, excuse me, but it's two people on the playlist, so you may want to just come check them both the bands out, and it's at All Asia in Cambridge, and I really like their music. And finally, I'm gonna play myself out here with another song, and this one is a little harder core. And for those of you who don't like the harder core, like mosh knit type music, Oh my gosh, there's a genre now, and it's moshnit. I hope Brooklyn Michelle knows that she has created a genre. And I think you're hearing my air conditioner or water running. I'm not sure what that is. Anyway, I should go take a look at that. But anyhow, so I wanted to play myself out, and I will play myself out with a song by called Best Friends by a band. And I don't know why I can't. Oh, there it is. All for Nothing. And they're from the Netherlands, and I really like this song, and it's got high energy, and I like it, and I hope you guys like it. And finally, as always, thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next week. There I go again, playing the wrong tune on my song. On my show. Oh, here we go. So those of you guys who haven't left the room, leave now. The hardest music's coming. Yeah, we can pull through.